Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and for the first time, we have a creator returning to talk about her web strip. Season 2 of it just launched, got started again, and I know fans were anxiously awaiting, and we'll get into that. The strip is Let's Play, and I have the creator, Mongi, Leanne Krasick, returning to the show. So, Leanne, thanks for coming back.
Pleasure to be here.
So for those of our listeners who maybe missed it the first time around, or maybe new to the show, or new to Let's Play, didn't get a chance to hear the first episode, why don't we start with you kind of reminding everybody about your background, how you got started with the strip Let's Play, and bringing it to the Webtoon platform.
My background was originally as a musician. I then decided I wanted to make a living and went into computer science. I have a degree in computer science information. And I worked head of IT for an internet-based company doing programming, web design, database administration for 11 years. And decided I was making too much money and decided I'd go into comics. And so, and I've been reading comics ever since I was probably 10. So, big love for comics, big love for IT and computer stuff. So, that crazy world, that journey that has ended me where I'm at today.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about that last time. You know, this love of comics and desire to tell stories and be a creator. But was it the fact that you had that background in IT that led you to the digital, or did you just think that would be kind of easier to break in?
Well, what originally happened was when I first got into programming for my career, I don't want to date myself and when that was, but digital art was still very much new. And so like tablets and stuff like that was very, I mean, they were just really bad, I'll just be honest. And so the first real technology that had potential for digital art was that I came across that I could afford was a tablet that you could bend the screen, or you can twist the screen around and lay it flat and you can draw on it. Mm-hmm. And I needed a laptop for work. And so I said, well, I would love to get back into art. So digital art seems really interesting to me because it kind of combines these two worlds that I'm really fascinated by. And so I bought that, and that's how I got into digital art. And I really haven't looked back since. I have like 40 blank notebooks I haven't drawn in, but that's really because I have a problem with buying those and I love them too much not to. But now I feel that the digital art just like tickles that techie fancy that I have, and I love that to death.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, again, anybody who's listening who doesn't know what the strip is about, they didn't get a chance to listen to the interview the first time around, or new listeners, why don't you kind of remind everybody what Let's Play is all about, kind of the elevator pitch, if you will.
Let's Play is a romance comedy. The elevator pitch is, I just say, it's a gaming comic with romance. And it's about a young woman who works in IT, and she is a developer by day and a game developer by night, and she really wants to become a game developer as her career. And she created the game, and it was played by a Let's Player named Marshall Law, who has a substantial following online, and he played the video and it went viral. And he played the game, I should say, in one of his videos, and his review of the game went viral. And as a result, his fan base became very rabid and attacked her profile on like what is equivalent to a Steam page for her developer aspect, and kind of ruined her online reputation. And by the end of the first episode, we find out that he's moving into the apartment next door.
Yeah, strange coincidence. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah, just like life, you know, just when you think it couldn't possibly get stranger, somehow it manages to.
Well, yeah, totally. I mean, that is very much life as such a small world, too.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we mentioned that you finished off season one, you know, had to take a break and recharge. Looking back on those first 75 episodes, how do you feel like looking back at that, both in terms of an accomplishment, but also, okay, now how do I up my game for season two?
Well, I think with like, okay, season one, I'm really happy with it. There are things about it I would have loved to have done a bit differently. And that's really just have included more supporting characters in various scenes. But it really just came down to the deadlines. Like I couldn't include those additional panels and interactions and stuff. And I think for season two, I would like to try to, I'm faster now than I was in season one in terms of drawing. So, okay. So for season two, I would like to have to include more supporting characters and, build more on smaller aspects of the plot and not have to like focus as much energy on these big softball plot lines that I, you know, it's like when you're working on deadlines, it's very much like, what can I fit in the time that I have each week? And so, and unfortunately, there have been chapters I've had to shave down, and I would like to not do that in season two.
Oh, that's definitely a good goal. And I think, you know, we were just talking about keeping the story true to life. So you definitely want to be able to have those aspects of supporting characters and kind of some other subplots to just to make it feel more real and to kind of engage fans. And it allows you to sort of explore other things that people can see as a touchstone and be their kind of gateway into the story, right?
Right, right, totally.
What would you say has been your biggest surprise looking back over the first season? Anything that stands out?
I think my biggest surprise has been just how, I think I probably said this in the last podcast, just how well it's been received. Like, I'm bumping into people on the street. Like I have a couple t-shirts that I've just made for myself on Zazzle that has Let's Play stuff on it. And they're comfy and oversized. And if I go to the grocery store, it's not unusual for me to wear one. And I have gone to the grocery store and people will actually be like, hey, is that Bowser from Let's Play? I'll be like, yeah. I'm like, do you read that? And they're like, totally, I love it. And I'm like, oh, hey, I'm Mongi. And they're like, you know, they're just dumbstruck. And so it's so, that's what's so surprising to me is that I'm just working, to me, in my headspace, I'm working on this little comic that I'm having fun with and I'm glad people are enjoying, but I don't really have a full scope of how many readers I have. So it's surprising to me when I do find that out.
Yeah, I mean, you do have a loyal fan base, a very big following, and there's plenty of, well, I think any print comic publisher would be very envious of the numbers. So
right.
That's great.
Right. But like I remember reading this interview by Kishimoto Musashi, and I'm not in any way, shape or form comparing myself to him. And he's the creator of the comic or the manga Naruto. And Naruto was hugely popular internationally. And when he finished the series, I think it was over the course of 15 years, he said in an interview that somebody asked him, like, how did he think about how popular his comic was internationally? And he's like, I have no idea how popular my comic is. And I, at the time when I read that, I'm like, how could he not know? You know, it's like, how could you not know that? And now, and I'm just this little small fish in this big massive pond. And even I'm like, bumping into people at a grocery store, and it's just like, now I understand it. Now I get at least a touch of what he means when he says that.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing about creating comics. That you're reaching all these people and in some ways touching their lives, you know, maybe some people more than others, if it just means that much more to them, and that's great. And you know, hundreds of thousands of people checking out this strip, but as a comic creator, you know, you're at home alone in a room, you know, telling this story that means so much to you, but it's in that way a very insular job, right? But then you take it and you share it with all these people. So it's such a dichotomous kind of profession in that way, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I tell people it's like, you know, I spend so much time working and in my office, I have to take a vitamin D supplement. That's how little I see the sun. It's just like, so no, I really don't have a full scope of readership and numbers. I mean, Webtoons can say you have this many subscribers or this many return readers or this many people getting fast pass. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Awesome. Great. I think it's like, I don't know what I am compared to others and stuff like that. So it's, you know, I'm very much absorbed in my world here in my little, you know, 8x10 foot office.
Yeah. 100%. Unless you were to see all those people in one place, then maybe it would sink in. But otherwise, yeah,
right.
It's kind of like, yeah, their numbers, what does it really mean, kind of thing. So,
right, yeah. I mean, when I was in Houston in May, I did, or Houston Comic Palooza, I had a signing down there. And on Saturday, the line wrapped around booth, the Webtoon booth, pretty well. And, like, I would meet people, and, like, almost some of them would be catatonic, almost, meeting me. Yeah. And that was one of the things that they liked about my comic was that Sam kind of gets into that state and they're like trying to tell me that they can relate to her.
Right.
And so it's like, it's funny when I get very self-conscious about like what perfume I wear because I am a hugger. And so when I go to these cons and I meet these people and they're like very shy or they're very anxious and I'm just like, just bring it in, honey. Let's hug this out. You know, it's just like, it's so bizarre to me, but very cool at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, you're touching people's lives. And like you said, some of these people, you know, suffer from social anxiety, just like Sam does in the strip. And so it's great mm-hmm. that they have something that, you know, they can relate to and it means so much to them. So that's really cool.
Right.
Let's talk about in terms of kind of artwork and sort of the nuts and bolts of storytelling. You mentioned you're pretty happy with, for the most part, with season one, other than, you know, maybe some time constraints. Is it easy for you when you look back to see how you have improved over time? You mentioned that you're faster when it comes to illustrating now, and I know you have some help with the color work, which also kind of speeds up your process. But can you look mm-hmm. back at those first, you know, few episodes and then look at where you are now? And can you see the improvement? Is that easy for you to see? And then also when you're building the story out, has that come easier, sort of the writing aspect as well?
Okay, so to answer the first question about the quality of my art, or at least looking at my art from season one and season now, I can barely look at my old art without cringing. Like, because we're doing a print version of Let's Play, and I'm meeting with the publisher and the individuals who are like actually formatting the art for a print medium, and I'm like, we're going over it page by page, and I'm just seeing this art, and I'm like, oh. Okay, you know, I cringe so much. It's just so bad. And I hear readers like, oh, I'm going to read the first season before the second season comes out. And I'm like, please don't, please don't look at the art. Just focus on the story. So it's, I can definitely tell a huge difference, in that regard. And, when it comes to like the story and coming up with story plots, it is a bit harder because I've been thrown some curveballs in terms of how Let's Play, different aspects of Let's Play has been received by readers. Mm-hmm. And so the direction I thought I would take certain things, readership has completely perceived or received that stuff completely different than I thought they would. So I'm like, well, maybe the original direction I was going to do for the story isn't for different aspects of the story is what I should do something differently. So if I get delayed and, or like if it comes to writing the story for the episodes in season two, I'm definitely like questioning my story a bit more than I did in season one. Cause in season one, I'm like, screw it, whatever. You know, if you don't like it, don't read it. But now I'm like, maybe they got a point. You know, it's just like, I have to be very sensitive and cognizant of perception, I think.
That's interesting. So, I mean, are these big plot points or is it more just in the way that certain things are sort of delivered? Like the end point is the same, but you're changing how you get there, so to speak.
There are some massive story points that may need to be changed.
Wow.
And it is something that I am speaking to my counsel about, and we're just like, wow, this is totally not the way we thought it would go in terms of how it would be perceived by fans. And So there is some small stuff, but there is also big stuff as well.
Wow, that's interesting. It'll be really fun to look back once it's done, because I know you do have an ending in mind. I think I've heard you say about 200 episodes. Does that sound right?
I mean, I very much had this, when I started Let's Play, I had this start and some filler key points throughout the story already set, and I had the ending. And now it's like, I have a lot more, I call it filler, but it's development. I mean, it's not like anime filler or something. But there are those key points throughout the story, and maybe even the end result, are things that a lot of us are questioning.
So that's what'll be really interesting.
When
it's all said and done, to look back and you may say, well, yeah, I'm happy with how it turned out, even though it surprised me. Or you may say, you know what, I'm thrilled with how it turned out, because it turned out it was, this change was for the better. You know, so it'll be interesting to look back when it's said and done.
Right. I mean, I very much can just continue the story the way I originally thought. And or I could just mold the story to how, I mean, I'm not saying that fans are telling me how to write the story. That's not it at all.
Right.
But there are things about how the story is being received that I completely misjudged how it would be. Mm-hmm. And, so I would never, if I have to make changes to the story, I wouldn't make any changes I wasn't happy with.
Right.
So, I'm not going to sacrifice anything. And if I don't feel I can make changes to the story that I'm happy with, then I won't. I'll just keep with what I have planned.
Wow. But, yeah, like I said, a really, really cool and interesting idea, and maybe something unique to Webtoon, just in terms of the fact that you do get this instant feedback from fans, you know, as opposed to more of a print comic that allows you to maybe make some changes.
Right. Well, there's a comic series called Bakuman that was originally done by the creators of Death Note. That's what it's called, Death Note. And Bakuman it follows two guys who are wanting to get into the manga industry in Japan. And for them, feedback from fans was very much filling out a survey via the publisher of the manga, and then modifying the story based on the results. So if such and such supporting character is really high in the popularity polls, maybe you need to write them into the story a bit more, that sort of stuff, right? So the thing is there's one creator who comes about whose comic becomes extremely popular very quickly, and they can't figure out why, the two main characters. And it turns out that that particular character is getting feedback from fans, and the fans and him are writing the story together, and it basically just goes belly up short way through, because it went away from the formula of, no, you need to do this, and you have to go through an editor, and you have to, like, you know, have more structure with your plot. And Let's Play, at least in Webtoons today, you definitely have that instant feedback of, I read the episode in 20 seconds, and this is what I think. And whereas in print, you know, you don't get that.
Right.
Really at all. I mean, unless you're like at the comic store when it's on the shelf, I guess. But, you know, you can get feedback at a con and stuff, but that's usually days, weeks, months later, and people have had time to digest what they read and think about it and see the overall perspective. Instead of just one episode, they've read the entire series or what have you. So it is a kind of a new paved road that we're walking on right now.
Yeah, and you can see it. I mean, well, there's a lot of positive to it, but then there's a negative as well. Because like you said, a lot of the comments can be sort of knee-jerk reactions. Because I know there's a lot of time it happens to me.
I mean, a lot of Webtoon creators go on hiatus from social media for those reasons. Because, you know, they could have 500,000 Instagram followers, and all of those people are just contacting them, ranting about something about the story or what they think they need to do. And it's really overwhelming. I had to take a hiatus for a short while too.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened to me where I've read a story the first time and I really didn't like that. And then when I had some time to sit and think about it and maybe reread it, I thought, oh, maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought, or I can kind of see the positives as opposed to, you know, focusing on the one thing that I didn't like about it, which, you know, can happen.
Right. Exactly.
There's something else I wanted to touch on. You mentioned looking back at your art and like cringing about, is it a specific part? Is it like the line work, like technically, or is it the way that you laid out the panels when we're telling the story? Cause for me, cause I've gone back and reread some early episodes. I just love your style. I mean, I see that it's changed over time. I would say it's softened a little bit. But I mean, that's my untrained artistic eye, so maybe.
Right. Well, I mean, like, my line work has changed a lot in terms of, I don't really do line weights anymore because that was adding more time and I just needed to get it done quicker. Right. But for me, when I look back and I'm just like, ugh, it's mainly their faces. Like, Marshall has changed a lot. And I think that's because before drawing his design, I hadn't really drawn his design before because I practiced my style drawing fan art. And so I was always doing somebody else's style and wasn't really ever doing my own. And when I started Let's Play, my style was still developing. And I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't think Let's Play was going to be as successful as it is. So I'm like, well, Let's Play storyline's a good plot to get my feet wet and learn the ropes of creating comics because it's my first one. And so when I started drawing it, my art wasn't probably where it should have been, and I was unsure about things, and I was anxious, and so I'm not a fan of their face. Their faces, I don't really like some of their body poses, but it's mainly just their faces. I'm just like, ugh, I just can't. They're goofy, and ugh. But I also can tell that a lot of the characters aren't consistent from one panel to the next, like Monica might look a little bit different or Sam might look a little bit different. And that's just, I have learned, is just something that comes with practice.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is too, it's not like this is unique to you or to digital comics or to, you know, aspiring creators. I mean, it happens to everybody. Their style changes over time. You can look at some of the you know, biggest names of traditional comic artists and look at their art from, you know, a few years ago and now, and yeah, the styles change. So I think it's perfectly normal. And also, as a creator, you want to make sure you're always challenging yourself, always trying to get better. So in that way, your art's going to always evolve to some extent.
Oh yeah, no, I don't by any means think my art is done evolving or improving, because art is one of those things that you're going to be improving until you die. I mean, and I'm really excited about that. Like, I'll probably in 2 years from now, look at what I'm drawing today and cringe. So it's like, I am really excited for what the future holds in terms of my art.
Yeah. Comes with the territory. We did mention you sort of taking a break between season one and season two, and you even mentioned taking a little break from social media. You feel like that really recharged you creatively? Were you really excited to get back and start releasing episodes and kind of get that feedback from fans again?
Right. Well, I'll be honest, I didn't actually want to take a break because I was really, really enjoying working on the comic. I mean, I wasn't sleeping a lot. I wasn't getting to do a lot of stuff with family and friends. But I was still very engrossed in the story and working on the comic. And, but I'm like, no, I need to take a break. You know, I need to get some stuff settled. I need to see family and friends. And I think I took 2 weeks off and then got right back to work because I just couldn't not work. I felt like I was just wasting so much time, but I played a lot of board games. I saw a lot of family. And took some very short trips, and it was nice, but I am definitely ready to get back into work.
Well, it seems like the fans were just as anxious for you to get back because, the first episode of season two just like exploded. It was like so many people checking it out. So
yeah.
Did you hear from fans that they were anxiously awaiting?
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons why I went on hiatus from social media, because while I was on break, I was working on some other stuff. Like, I always have these stories. I have like 6 to 8 stories just living in my head right now. And sometimes I just want to draw them just to, you know, get that out, let it air out a little bit. And I drew some concept for another story that I may never actually create. And when I was posting that stuff, there was like 200 comments on Instagram asking when Let's Play was going to be back. Okay. And that's it. And I was just like, at that time, the deadline was still kind of up in the air on the exact day. So I couldn't just be like, oh, it's come back on the 19th because that wasn't decided yet. So it's great that people were really eager to start reading my comic again. I'm very flattered in that regard. But it's that binge mentality of today. You know, it's like, I'm not Netflix. You know, I can't just score out an entire season and you can just sit down and binge for 8 hours an entire season. So it was very, there were a lot of very eager fans, and that's great, but it's very draining at the same time.
Yeah, I could see how that could be sort of a double-edged sword. And I don't, it's so hard. I mean, the story is so engrossing, and it's kind of hard to put your finger on, you know, what it is about it. You just seem to have sort of captured lightning in a bottle. The story does touch on, you know, quite a few genres, you know, a lot of your loves, you know, you have obviously the manga influence, game, mm-hmm. Mental health, there's mental health issues, there's the romance aspect. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, it seems like these characters you've created, they really speak to people. People mm-hmm. care about them and what happens to them. I mean, has that been your mm-hmm. experience in talking to fans and talking to readers? It's really a love of the characters that's kind of made this thing blow up as big as it has?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things about Let's Play characters is they're all flawed in some way or shape or form. And when we learn their flaws, I think people are instantly like, ah, we have that in common. And so I think seeing these everyday actions, we're trying to get through an adventure called life with these quote unquote RNG assigned negative traits that we get when we roll our character when we're born, you know, gaming reference. It's talking to fans and them saying, you know, I have anxiety issues. I've talked to people who are like, I'm suffering from depression, and seeing Marshall having the switch that he turns on when he interacts with people, I can totally relate to that. And I think that, you know, you want to have characters that people can relate to, that they can care about, they root for, or boo, I guess. And there are a lot of characters in Let's Play, and I think that there's just a little bit of something for everybody.
Yeah, that's probably very true. And I want to talk a little bit more about the mental health aspect you mentioned already. Mm-hmm. I think that there's so much of that. I think there's actually a mental health crisis in this country right now, and there's somewhat of mm-hmm. a stigma with it. Obviously, we saw mm-hmm. Sam early on deal with kind of the social anxiety. Marshall has his own kind of stuff, like you mentioned. And it's something that I relate to when I read the strip myself, because I by nature am pretty introverted, but just doing what I do, mm-hmm. talking to creators and going to conventions and everything, you do have to flip that switch. But then there's always yep. the price to pay after, where, you know, you feel drained because you've basically been on stage for, you know, the entire weekend. But there's right. there's such a stigma to mental health, unfortunately, you know, and I don't know if it's unique to just this country or if it's worldwide, but I think it's important to get these issues kind of out in the open and talk about them. Was that sort of behind your thinking in exploring this and not shying away from that, and as you said, making these characters real and flawed?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it. I know personally, so I had horrible, almost debilitating social anxiety when I was younger, due to illness, physical illness. And that same physical illness also causes me a lot of physical pain. And so growing up, I gamed, and I learned through gaming that I could take that conscious part of my brain and get absorbed in whatever game I'm playing. And for that time, I'm not suffering, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so for me, mental health is so heavily tied to gaming. I wanted to really include, like, I can't think of gaming without mental health. And it's like, for me, gaming is a mental health improvement, unless it's a PvP game that just makes you rage quit all the time. It's not necessarily a positive mental state, but so it's to me, and there's also this, I have theories as to why mental health is such a stigma today. But I really personally feel like I just think it's silly to have a stigma of it. And I think making it more a part of a story where people are more introduced to it and can understand it better, more exposure, it becomes less of a taboo to think about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that when you look at the way that it's addressed in the story, it's nowhere near, you know, it's not looked down upon the way that it might be. And I'm not, that's not to say everybody looks down on it. And I think it's better now than it used to be. We're sort of, you know, as a society coming to terms with it and sort of looking at it. Cause nobody blames you if you have the cold or the flu and you miss work. But if, you know, you're, right. If it's depression, people are, oh, you're just sad, you know, suck it up or whatever. And being physically ill doesn't have the same kind of negative connotation. And I think we're moving in the right direction, but I think you're right. Not only exploring mental illness like you are, or mental health issues like you are in the story, but showing that people can deal with it with compassion and without that sort of, you know, dismissive attitude, I think is important.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, so like I'm married and my husband would be categorized as a fixer. Like he's a fixer type of person. Mm-hmm. Something's broken, he fixes it. And on the days that I am depressed or anxious or what have you, there's not really anything that he can do to fix it.
Right.
Because it's all in my head and it's stuff I have to deal with. And so when we were younger and dating or early in our marriage, it would be very frustrating for him because he couldn't fix the problem. But now he knows to support, you know, and he understands that it's not anything he's done wrong. There's not anything he can do other than just support me. And I think for society, that might be a large part of it, is that people say I'm depressed or I have depression or I'm really socially anxious. Those people that they tell, there are people they tell that to, it's like, well, I can't fix it. So the only thing I can really do is just say, suck it up, you know, or like, yeah, I'm sad. So everybody gets sad. And it, like, they don't fully understand that it's like, no, it's actual, just like, it's the flu kind of, but it's in your brain. You know, it's like, it's kind of hard to explain. And I think people are getting more and more exposed to it. And, it's been interesting hearing other people's stories, and there is a downside to having a story that follows a lot of mental health, because I get a lot of feedback, private feedback from fans who tell me they're in a really bad place and I'm powerless to do anything about it. I've already had to call the police at least once on one individual, because they were about to act and do something to hurt themselves. So it's great that I'm helping people, but it also attracts, as a creator, attention from those people who are in a really bad place, and I am powerless to do anything about it, really, other than call the cops.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, some of these people, all they need is somebody to talk to, you know, at the end of the day. So, but yeah, I feel it's important. I'm glad that it's an aspect of the story to kind of shed some light on it, because if we can reduce that stigma, then maybe those people can reach out to friends and family who maybe are, you know, dismissive. If we just, I think it's just a need to educate at the end of the day, you know, so. Well, I know that you're always under constant deadline, you know, you mentioned that, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I did want to ask about the Kickstarter, though. I know you had an incredibly successful Kickstarter. I think the goal was, what, 10 or 20,000, and you got over 200, is that?
Yeah, it was originally set for 10, and we got to, I think it was 230.
Yeah.
I think is what the end result was.
Amazing. So
yeah, I was gobsmacked. I never thought it would be nearly as popular. Like, I didn't think it would, when we were leading up to it, they're like, Well, you know, it was like this toss up. Should we set it to 8,000 or 10,000? Because we're like, well, if we do shipping, you know, we don't really know like overhead, blah, blah, blah. And so we decided on 10. And we had long discussions like, well, what if we don't meet it? What if this? Like, what if that? My husband's thinking he's going to have to write a check for $8,000. You know, it's like, so this actually comes to be. And so when it went live and we met it, I think we met the goal in like less than 3 hours or something like that. It blew my mind that people who can read my comic for free would want to pay to have a physical copy of my comic.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show how much people are invested. It's one thing to have it on the tablet, but it's another thing to say, you know, this is mine. I can hold it in my hand. I mean, it's part of the reason that, you know, digital and print still exist in the comic book medium. I mean, if you go back and listen to what the retailers were saying when digital started to become a thing, they were like, the sky is falling. It's not going to, but instead they've seen the opposite, mm-hmm. right? People discovered on digital. It's sort of the spinner rack of the day, if you will. People want to be invested in it. So, obviously wildly successful, all kinds of great rewards and everything. And I know not everything may be available, but if somebody did miss the Kickstarter, I wanted to make sure that we got this out there. Is there a way for them to still get a print copy of Let's Play?
Yeah. So when we do the volume 2 of the Kickstarter, which is going to be episodes 24 to, I think 50, they can increase, they can do an add-on for volume 1 if they want. So that Kickstarter, I think, is coming out either at the end of the fall or winter. And I believe Rocket Ship is going to be actually creating a store where you can buy their book online. I know I'll have a few copies that I could sell. We are working on getting a number for it so we can put it in like Amazon, and stuff like that. So, there should be other ways for people to get their hands on a copy.
Great. So at the end, everybody, we'll plug Leanne's social media and you'll know where to go, because I'm sure she'll announce it there when the time comes. But obviously with the success of the first volume, already plans for a second volume and probably to continue to make sure that eventually the whole entire story is in print for anybody who wants to have physical copies. Mm-hmm. So that's great.
Okay. Absolutely.
As we wrap up here, any advice you would give to aspiring creators, whether digital or otherwise? You know, I know we've talked about the fan community and how amazing they are. And I know you've had a chance to interact with other Webtoon creators as well, especially at San Diego Comic-Con this year. So if you could kind of wrap all, I know it's kind of a lot, but wrap all that up in sort of your closing thoughts here about the Webtoon platform itself.
Okay, well, advice I would give to other creators is that a lot of people, I've done a lot of portfolio reviews. I've talked to a lot of young creators and not so young creators, new creators, I should say. And the one thing that they're all failing to do is creating their comic and putting it out there. I've talked to some creators who have done like print on demand for their comic and things like that, but they're not promoting their comic. They're not putting it out there. It's like, create the thing, put it on Webtoons, put it on Topastic, put it on Graphite, put it on whatever, get your own website, go to godaddy.com, get your site, put it out there so people can go and read it. And it's like the creators I speak to, they're so nervous about how their comic is going to be received. They don't even work on the thing. They're like, it's just living in their head, which is great, but they need to get it out there so people can actually see it. Like, don't be afraid of people not liking your comic. They're not going to like your comic if they never see it. That would be my biggest advice.
Yeah, it's something I hear from a lot of Webtoon creators. I mean, if you call yourself a comic creator, the number one thing you have to do to be a comic creator is create the comic.
Yeah, create the comic. And it's not unusual for me to meet somebody who's just like the writer of a comic and then introduce themselves as, oh, I'm just the writer. And I'm like, no, you are a writer, not just the writer. Like, take pride in your role in this comic and introduce yourself as the writer. Don't be, it's just this insecurity, you know, that people have. And There are so many great writers, there's so many great artists and all that kind of stuff. And like people tell me, oh, I don't think my art is good enough to be a comic creator. And I'm like, have you heard of XKCD? It literally is stick figures and it's very, very popular. You don't have to have great art to tell a great story. So I think people just need to just bear down and just put it down on paper or digital paper or what have you and get it out there.
Yeah, I would say that's the advice I hear from a lot of people who are in the industry is, yeah, you just got to do it. There's no excuses these days with platforms like Graphite and Webtoon to be able to get your story out there for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this today, the outlets we have today is nothing compared to what it was out. Like, this just, what we have today was not available 10 years ago. 100%. And like when the huge webcomic boom was in like, I don't know, 2004, five, like that was people posting a comic on their own website and praying for the, what was it called? The website things that they have, the rings that they had. They would put like these little like, oh, you put it down at the bottom of your website and you click it and it'll take it to the next site in the ring. And they just like pray that people get to their comic. And now we have so many outlets to actually post that on with ad revenue already built in. It's such a great time to get into the industry. And I really just do it. Just do the thing.
Just do it. All right. Well, as we finish up here, Leanne, I'll leave the floor open to you. Anything you want to say to your readers or fans? About season two or anything else?
I'm grateful. I'm so grateful that I have for my readers. I'm doing what I love, and you know there were nights when I was after I left my other job in IT, I would be laying in bed crying because I'm like, if my career as a comic creator doesn't take off or isn't successful, I have to go back to a job that I hate and. I was terrified, but thanks to the readers and the support, I'm able to do what I love. And I work 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, killing myself almost physically, but loving every minute of it. So thank you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. We mentioned we'd give your social media if anybody wants to follow along, know when the Kickstarters are about to drop and all that kind of good stuff. Where's the best place online to follow along with your work?
Definitely Twitter. So it's I'm Mongol Marie on Twitter.
Great. And I'll put a link to the Twitter in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having a hard time finding Leanne on Twitter, just go to the show notes, click on the link, and you'll be able to follow her there. So Leanne, it was great to meet you in person at San Diego this year. And great to have
you. Yeah, it was great seeing you.
So I'm anxiously awaiting more of season two. I've obviously read the first episode that's come out so far, and that's sparked in me the desire to go back and reread season one as well. So I'm in that boat. Some of the other fans are
awesome
and revisiting. So, but I love the art. So I got to tell you, I just love it. I think it's.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't particularly notice anything that doesn't sit right with me. So I know that doesn't really help your critical eye, but yeah, I think it's right. It's got
right. Well, I mean, it is what it is. It's there. I'm not going to go back and change it unless I absolutely have to for whatever reason. But you know, I look at. Manga, I was more into manga growing up than I was American comics. And I just look at mangas that lasted for 15 or more years. If you look at this art when the creator started and the art when they finished, it is so incredibly different and better. Really, and so I just see it as just a natural progression for creators.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So again, thanks for taking the time to join us and talk about Let's Play Season 2. And look forward to seeing you again sometime soon.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The readings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.